This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and Vantage Health Plan provide signature support. And our special guest for much of the hour is Dan Moldea, the intrepid reporter from Washington, D.C., who was on the cutting edge of ferreting out information that caused the careers of Newt Gingrich, Bob Livingston, and David Vitter to change. And for many of those assignments, he was working for Larry Flint, who died last week, and we will talk with him about that. And, of course, the news of the week was dominated by the acquittal of President Donald John Trump on his charges of starting an insurrection with his words and deeds. And the acquittal was 57-43 in favor of convicting, but in the U.S. Senate, it takes 67 votes to convict on an article of impeachment passed by the U.S. House of Representatives. As we speak right now, and I know many listeners now are tuning in at night when this show re-airs, so as we're talking right now, it is 9:09 in our area, and we've had an ice storm overnight, a rare one indeed for this area, and the roads right now are extremely treacherous. Many of them are closed, although the surface streets are largely open. But it is a case in which the temperature today is not expected to go above the freezing mark. In fact, it is expected to go down to about 18 degrees overnight. So it should be treacherous for a while. So please be safe, and if you can avoid it, it would be wise to stay off the roads. 877-217-5757 is our Talk Louisiana number. And later in the hour, we should hear from the former state climatologist, Jay Grimes, the meteorologist for WAFB television, chief meteorologist. But Dan Moldea is with us. 57 senators voted to convict, and one of those was William Morgan Cassidy of Louisiana, and John Neely Kennedy, the junior senator, voted to acquit President Trump, as did 43 Republicans. Dan, your thoughts about how this shook out Saturday afternoon?
Jim, how are you?
Fine.
I hope you're safe, and I hope you're warm down there. You guys are really getting whacked, aren't you?
We are getting whacked, but you do this all the time, so weather is always a story, but it's something that we know we will get beyond. It'll just take a little time and a little patience and be safe.
Now, will we get beyond the impeachment? That's the question. I think that Cassidy's vote was such a shock, I got to tell you. I was really shocked. I was shocked by his first vote. When he was among those who voted that it was constitutional. That surprised me. I thought he was playing some sort of a game or something like that, because I kind of always viewed Cassidy, as I view Kennedy, as being kind of a knuckle-dragger. And in Cassidy's vote, I would consider it a profile in courage. From what I understand, the Louisiana Republican Party has basically called him to task on this, as they did with Liz Cheney in Wyoming. And so I would say it was a vote of conscience, and I say, you know, I'm not a big fan of Cassidy, but I say hooray for him. I mean, he showed some raw courage, and there's nothing more I respect than somebody who stands up for principle. And so apparently he did just that, so good for him.
Well, and he, in today's pages of The Advocate, the newspaper of record in Louisiana, The Advocate / Picayune, he has an op-ed piece in which Senator Cassidy says he voted the way he did because President Trump was guilty. Now, he's already been censured by the East Baton Rouge Parish GOP. Ranking Republican House Member Blake Miguez says that Senator Cassidy will not be welcome as he returns home. But
in
Louisiana, Dan, we don't have a closed primary, so all the candidates are together. So it's harder for a candidate to be, quote, primaried out in Louisiana. And Cassidy also has the luxury of just being reelected. So he's got 6 years to weather this. So it was on the surface, it was not a particularly heroic thing, but it sounds like he did just what he thought was right.
And
his words were very similar to those of Mitch McConnell, who said the president...
Well, Mitch McConnell was sui generis. I mean, that was what he said was absolutely remarkable. I mean, he had three glowing moments in the midst of this thing. A guy who, to have a good moment for this guy was, to me, a very, very high bar. And he had three since the insurrection. He had the vote for the to certify the election, and then on the evening when they reconvened after the Capitol insurrection, he made a very damning statement about Trump back then. And then the thing that he did on Saturday, I frankly thought that it was possible that McConnell was looking for some way to get the votes necessary to convict the guy, but he wasn't going to put his status as Senate minority leader at risk by going off and being, say, the eighth senator to vote for conviction. I think he could have brought a couple of more people on with him, but I think that he figured they couldn't get the 17 votes, and therefore it wasn't worthy for him. It wasn't worthy of his willing to sacrifice himself. Well, I think he just stayed the path and came up with one of the crazy excuses that the defense attorneys came up with: jurisdiction, First Amendment. He gave them, I think, four reasons not to vote for conviction, and apparently the rest of the senators and the Republicans who didn't vote for, among the, I guess the other 43 decided, they were not going to, they were going to embrace the excuses as opposed to the reality of Trump's complicity and in the Capitol insurrection.
877-217-5757 for Dan Moldea, the reporter of investigative nature who's ferreted out more information about Louisiana politicos that have changed careers than anybody in history. And he's in Washington, D.C., and he's been following this with us and others for years now. The President Trump era has been a gift that keeps on giving, and it's giving now almost a month after he left office. And I've mentioned in the Southeastern Conference, the 11 states that represent the SEC, the tally among senators in the Southeastern Conference, 19 voted to acquit, 3 voted to convict. The 3 who voted to convict were Georgia's Warnock and Ossoff and Cassidy. So 19-3. So if you take out the SEC, the other 39 states voted 54-24 to convict. It would have been enough to convict President Trump on the articles of impeachment. So it is the South, ironically, Dan Moldea, that has saved this president more than once, got him elected once, almost got him elected again, and this time prevented him from being convicted on an article of impeachment.
It's stunning. It's just stunning the way these people continue to blindly support this guy. See, I thought that the Republicans would have relished in the opportunity to get rid of this guy, for heaven's sakes. This guy is going to be an albatross around their necks, at least for the next 2 years until the midterms. And he's bad news. I mean, he is always going to be strapped with the Capitol insurrection. Everybody knows. Everybody with a heartbeat knows that this guy was basically culpable for his behavior and what happened during the Capitol insurrection. And my goodness, I mean, the position that he put Mike Pence in, his own vice president, and no one was more loyal to him than Mike Pence. And he literally hung him out to dry and left him to be murdered. I just don't know how crazy the Republican base has to be in order to continue to support this perpetrator.
Well, there were some surprises. Richard Burr of North Carolina also was one of those who was not thought to come on board, but he did. And he is leaving the Senate. Now, Cassidy, as mentioned, has the luxury of a 6-year term. John Kennedy does not. He's up for re-election next year. Do you think this will have repercussions for people down the line?
Oh yeah, I think this is, I mean, what's happened. This was a blatant attempt to overthrow the United States government. Blatant. I history is going to be very, very cruel to those who turned their back on this and said, "Oh, let's get past this." This was an attempt to overthrow the United States government like nothing we've ever seen before, and it was orchestrated, engineered by the President of the United States, who had lost an election, clearly had lost an election that had been certified by all 50 states, in which all of his appeals had been turned down by the courts, and an election that he just refused to concede. And once again, people were killed, people died, and his own vice president was at risk as a result of his determination to keep the job, even though he was no longer entitled to the job because he had been defeated.
Well, today's New York Times front page, the seed for Senator Bill Cassidy's decision to find Donald J. Trump guilty of inciting an insurrection, was planted one day last fall when he received an email from a friend that was full of the then president's false claims about a stolen election. Alarmed that Mr. Trump's lies were gaining credence, Mr. Cassidy, a Louisiana Republican, became part of a small minority in his party and one of only a few officials in the South to acknowledge President Biden's victory. Months later, after Mr. Trump's campaign to overturn the election culminated in the Capitol riot, Mr. Cassidy was one of only seven Republican senators who voted Saturday to convict him. We will talk more with Dan Moldea. We will go to the phone lines, starting with David in Atlanta. The two Georgia senators voted to convict Donald Trump, but they were only three of 22 from states representing the mighty Southeastern Conference. 877-217-5757, your number on an inclement day. We hope to hear from you. We're back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. We are here live in studio on a wild, inclement, icy day in Baton Rouge. But we'd like to hear from you again, 877-217-5757. Before we return to the phones with Dan Moldea, here's Senator Bill Cassidy, senior senator from Louisiana, elected in 2014, unseated Mary Landrieu. Voted with Donald Trump 89% of the time, but Saturday he voted to convict the former president on the article of impeachment of inciting an insurrection. Here is Bill Cassidy.
Our Constitution and our country is more important than any one person. I voted to convict President Trump because he is guilty.
877-217-5757. David in Atlanta, you are on. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having my favorite guest on again, Jim. You know, when Neville Chamberlain returned from Munich, Sir Winston Churchill addressed the British Parliament. He said, "You have chosen appeasement over war. You shall have both." The Republican Party, like Ted Cruz, they have appeased Trump, and there will be a war in the Republican Party. This is like inviting an alligator into your living room to be eaten alive, and that's what Trump is going to have the Republican Party do to itself.
All right. Well, Trump is not going away. We know that. And Dan, chances are you'll be running in 2024. Does he have any viability left?
I don't think so. And David, incidentally, David is my favorite caller, too, incidentally. I love David. He's great. He's the reasonable man. He is always the reasonable man. Anyway, I agree with him. I think this has opened the floodgates for an internal war within the Republican Party. I think that there aren't many moderates left in the Republican Party, but it's going to be a fight between the far right and the loony right, and it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. I mean, they had an opportunity to get rid of Trump here. They really did. All they had to do was step up and get their 17 votes, and he was gone. And now he is here, and he owns the party, and he's martyred in the eyes of many. He is vindicated. And that is that's a real problem. I just thank God he doesn't have a Twitter account, because he would be driving us absolutely mad right now if he did.
He's apparently getting back on Facebook. Another David.
Oh, really?
I think they're going to restore that. But I'll be eager to see if he gets back on Twitter. But he is largely silent without his Twitter account and without the podium that he had as president of the United States. And,
right.
And Mitch McConnell mentioned that he had the biggest podium in the world, and he misused it. And he convinced people who believed in him that he was right and that the election was stolen. And as I've stated before, Dan, we've been around. We've seen much closer elections than this. This was not even a close one, and he said
right.
It was stolen.
Well, 306 to 232, I think, was the electoral vote, which was exactly the same vote that he got against Hillary Clinton in 2016, and he called that a landslide. So he has been defeated by Joe Biden in a landslide, and he still refused to admit it.
And the other day we had a caller saying 90,000 votes could have changed everything in the Senate and
True.
The House and the presidency. Well, it's not 90,000 votes because Trump would have needed four states to flip, four. And he lost every state by more than 10,000 votes. And in Michigan and Pennsylvania, he lost by big margins in those states compared to what Hillary Clinton did. David in Lafayette says Richard Burr in North Carolina can vote as he did because he has nothing to lose, so I'm unimpressed. He's walking out the door. And those who...
Still, yeah. he's gonna have a lot of peer pressure. I mean, good for Burr. I mean, Burr was head of, what, the Senate Intelligence Committee,
I think it was. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And they did the Russiagate investigation, and he worked well with Senator Warner, his Democratic counterpart on the committee. And he saw a lot of stuff about Trump, and I thought probably a lot of that had to do with his decision to vote to convict as well.
Here is Stuart downtown. Stuart, you were on with Dan. Good morning, Stuart.
Jim, Dan, and your audience, good morning. Jim, glad you're safe from being held up a few days ago.
Thank you.
Dan, certainly. What do you think would have happened to Barack Hussein Obama if he would have pulled a stunt of this magnitude?
Well, I'm sorry, you were held up, Jim? I'm sorry.
I was.
You got held up?
Yeah, I was held up. But
you were mugged? You were robbed at gunpoint?
I was robbed at gunpoint, yes. Yes.
On the street?
On the street, yes.
Are you okay?
I'm okay. But thanks for Stuart and Dan. And
that says,
and as far as I know, it wasn't an angry listener. So I think we're okay.
Right. If Barack Obama had pulled something like this, A, there would have been a lot of dead black people on the grounds of the Capitol that day. I don't think there would have been any hesitation to start gunning people down under those circumstances. I don't know what these guys were thinking about when these people invaded the Capitol, but if Black Lives Matter or something connected to the Antifa philosophy would have done that, I would assume there would have been a lot of dead black people. And also, they wouldn't even have hesitated. They're talking about he had a First Amendment right to do this. Trump had a First Amendment right. There was a jurisdictional problem. They would have thrown all that aside. It would have been a unanimous vote for the Republicans to convict him. And I can assure you there would have been a lot of Democrats who would have voted for it as well. The thing is that Barack Obama would never, ever in a million years, and 99.99% of the Democrats or Republicans in our country would even have considered doing something like this. This is so uniquely Donald Trump to take it to the end and to try to pull something like that off and feel that he's got a right to do it without challenge or with a consequence.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a problem.
Well, Obama, in his re-election, he defeated Mitt Romney by right at 5 million votes, and Trump just lost by more than 7 million votes. So Romney actually ran a closer race to Obama than did Trump to Joe Biden, President Biden. And Mitt Romney is the one who has a profile and courage because he lives in a state that went overwhelmingly for Donald Trump.
I agree.
And
he
not only voted this time the way he did, he was the only Republican in the Senate to vote for impeachment the first go around. And I would say that Mitt Romney is coming across as a statesman. And whether you agree with his vote or not, he is definitely putting something on the line by taking this stand.
Do you think Romney's even thinking about running in 2024?
Yes, I think.
I think he is too. And I have to tell you, I think he. He could be. See, I don't think Joe Biden's running for re-election. I don't think he's going to. I think Joe Biden is coming in to save the world for one term, and he's going to take a bow when he's solved the pandemic. He has rebuilt the economy. He has brought people back into some semblance of reality again of what we once had, and then I think he's going to leave the stage. But Romney could be I'm a centrist. I believe that you run from the center, you govern from the center, and I think that the extremes are, I think that's one of the reasons why we have these great divisions, because there's so many people on the extremes. I like Biden because he's a centrist. I like Barack Obama because he's a centrist. Bill Clinton, a centrist. And Hillary Clinton. I love Hillary Clinton, a centrist. And and Romney could be perceived as a centrist, and so he'll be a formidable candidate if the Republicans are willing to accept him. Again,
yeah,
you have a lot of crazy people in the Republican Party right now.
Well, it'll probably come down to a battle for the Republican Party and its soul and its future with possibly Romney or someone like Romney running against a Trumper on the other side, and the Trumper might be the Trumpster himself, Donald John. Gaston on Highland. Gaston, you're on with Dan Moldea.
Right. Good morning, gentlemen. I just wanted to add to the conversation. Wasn't Michael Flynn in a meeting with the president around the beginning of January, I think the 3rd or something like that, and there was reports that they talked about a coup?
A military intervention to prevent this transition of power. I think that was reported to be accurate, and it would not seem to be out of character, would it, Dan?
I'm unaware of that. That's news to me. That I knew that Flynn was involved in a lot of this stuff, and from what I understand, he had some connections with some of the groups that came to Washington. But I was unaware of this conversation where there was some discussion about the possibility of
direct
action.
They wanted to seize the voting machines, I think. If you really believe the election was stolen, then obviously you would take unusual action. But there is no evidence, I repeat, no evidence this election was stolen. We're back with Dan in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. Matt Doyle producing. Dan Moldea, one of our favorite guests, is with us. The exceptional reporter for, five decades now. Actually, if you count them, 70s, 80s, 90s, O's, 1s, 2s, that's 6 decades. So he is with us at your service. Patrick in Innisfail State. Patrick, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, Patrick.
Hey, good morning. The one caller said, or y'all said, what if Black Lives Matter did this protest? I don't think there would have been a lot of black people at a Black Lives Matter protest. When I see photos of a Black Lives Matter protest, it's a sea of white people, and I think it's Marxist people, and the destruction would have been far worse, and nobody would have been prosecuted for it. And I think black folks know that they're being used by this Marxist movement
Do you really believe that, Patrick, or are you just having a bad day?
No, I see the news, and when I see a Black Lives Matter protest, it's nothing but white people. Look at it. It's
all right. Thank you. Dan, your response?
I was talking about the knuckle-draggers in the Republican Party, and I think we just heard from one.
Well, interestingly, the national spokesperson for Black Lives Matter is Chanel Matthews, who's an LSU graduate who made her broadcast debut on this show. She's 36 years old. She lives in New York City. And she is slated right now to be on our show on March 10th. And she is an African-American female, Patrick. 877-217-5757, Charlotte in Iberia Parish. Charlotte, you're on with Dan. Good morning to you, Charlotte.
Good morning to you, Jim. Good morning to Dan. I'm calling to ask whether it could be said that the attempted coup by the marauders provoked by the president was actually an attempt to disenfranchise 81 million voters who supported Biden versus what they're alleging about the president's supporters. Thank you.
All right.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. I mean, he had determined that he had been cheated out of his victory as a result of the what he considered to be the abuse of the mail-in ballots. And as a consequence, he was immovable in his decision that the election had been rigged. Of course, he'd been setting the stage for this for months, as Jamie Raskin, who, incidentally, Jamie Raskin's mother was like a big sister to me. I did one of the three eulogies at her funeral in 1999. And Jamie Raskin is such a respected guy, and his credentials are, beyond reproach. He's just he did a wonderful, wonderful job as the captain of the of team House Managers. And, the case that he made, I think, against Trump, dealing with the, what Trump was trying to claim, as opposed to, the 81 million that the lady refers to. I mean, people are, again, it's a question of alternative facts. We have to start agreeing on facts. If it's 81 million versus 74 million, we have to start recognizing this. We have to start agreeing on some facts. Incidentally, Jim, I just noticed that the great Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Tyler Bridges just published a story in the Advocate.
He did about
Larry
Flynn.
That you are mentioned in here as well. I see that he talks about you as well in here. about your April 2002 interview with Vincent Bruno.
Yes.
And invited you to the Treen campaign. Anyway, anything Tyler writes, I'm a big fan of. So.
Well, yes, and I know he told me this was coming, and it is out, and you were a person he interviewed. And since we're on the topic, Larry Flynt, a flawed man, obviously, but a man who...
As I am.
Well, as we all are. He turned out to be a titan of journalism, and without Larry Flynt, who was essentially the boss of Dan Moldea when he was ferreting out this sordid information about several U.S. congressmen, those stories never would have happened, would they?
No. What had happened was I had done a book about Vince Foster's suicide. And the book didn't do very well, but it was a good book. I was very proud of the book. And then in the midst of it, I had a right-wing publisher. There was a right-wing publisher came to me, Regnery, came to me and asked me to do this book about Vince Foster because they had been hearing this stuff about, you know, the right-wing claims that Foster was murdered, and they knew I had great law enforcement connections. So they gave me $100,000. To go out and do this book. So I did. And what I found was instead of a right-wing conspiracy to a left-wing conspiracy to kill Vincent Foster, what I found was a right-wing conspiracy to make it look that way. Regnery wasn't thrilled about that, but during my investigation, I had to contact Ken Starr's office, the Office of the Independent Counsel, which was also investigating the Vince Foster situation. But when I called, they would say, well, who's your publisher? And I would say, Regnery. And they said, well, hell, you know, you're one of us. You're a brother in the bond here. And so they talked to me. And it was through those talks that I became a principal character in the whole Ken Starr was illegally leaking information, and which led to a bunch of things happening. Anyways, I ended up filing an affidavit with the court about the specific leaks. None of these conversations were off the record. None of these conversations were off the record. I didn't do anything I didn't say I was going to do. Flynt took notice, and he called me, and he said he put a $1 million reward up for evidence about people who were doing what they were claiming President Clinton was doing, and they asked me if I'd be the investigator for it, and so I decided about 5 seconds to do it. And I came on, and I think the first person I got was Newt Gingrich. And then I got Bob Livingston, Bob Barr, Senator Hutchison from Arkansas, and there were a number of others that we, you know, a number of other fish
and,
that we ended up
course,
throwing back
David,
in the water.
David Vitter and all of
David
these,
Vitter, I got him in 2007.
All
I
of
was
these,
doing a book with the D.C. Manum.
Each one of these people pointed fingers at President Clinton, accusing him of sexual misconduct, and what do you know? They were doing it, in some cases doing it in ways that some would argue is more sordid than what President Clinton was accused of, and obviously he did. But Trump, amazingly, he survived paying $130,000 to a porn star. Imagine if President Obama or if Hillary Clinton had been elected and it had been reported that she paid $130,000 to a porn star for silence. Can you imagine that, Dan? What the repercussions would be?
No more than I could imagine if Barack Obama had been something the equivalent of the Capitol insurrection. I mean, it would have been horrible. It would have been horrible for all involved. And there's hypocrisy all over politics, let's face it. But the Republicans always have a way of overplaying their winning hands and they have a way of mm-hmm. being self-destructive, and I think they're in the midst of much of a self-destruction right now by clinging to Donald Trump.
Well, in the minds of some Republicans and some Democrats, when a man is having an affair, as Bill Clinton did, and stays with his wife, that's worse than what Newt Gingrich did, was to have an affair with a woman and leave his wife, and he's done it on two occasions, for the woman with whom he was having an affair. You know, the schooling I got, 13 years of Catholic education, we're not supposed to be divorced, are we?
Well, it's also with regard to me. I mean, I was walking around with and had the authorization to negotiate a $1 million deal with Larry. And The only person we ended up paying was, this is on the record, the number's not on the record, but the person we paid, we ended up paying Bob Barr's ex-wife, the congressman from Georgia, who was one of the House managers and wrote the articles of impeachment against Clinton. We ended up making a deal with her. She had a really particularly sad situation, and we were happy to pay her. The woman who gave me Livingston, she wouldn't accept it. She wouldn't accept anything. I invited her to tape me, and I taped her, and I'm still stunned. She did this out of conscience. She didn't want anything. She didn't ask for anything. I kept on offering it to her. She wouldn't accept it. You know, to me, this woman was a hero. I've never named her. I've never even given a clue as to who she is. I never would, because I'm very loyal to her. And once again, the principle that she showed what she was doing, that she was trying to do the right thing, and she did.
James in Metairie. Hi, James. You're on with Dan.
Good morning, Jim. I'm glad to hear you're okay. You know, concerning the porn star who was paid $130,000, I think it was Bill Maher who said she was grossly underpaid. I want to just point out Lindsey Graham's just unbelievable hypocrisy. You know, in 2016, early, he said Trump is a kook. He's crazy. He's unfit for office. About 18 months later, he's blaming the press for saying that, Trump is unfit to be president. But what I want to say is this. Graham was down in Mar-a-Lago over the weekend, I guess, plotting and planning with Donald Trump. Now he's promoting Trump's daughter-in-law, Lara Trump, to run for the position of Burr in North Carolina, and it appears that she's got a darn good chance.
All right, yeah, she's apparently going to run, as is Ivanka, against Marco Rubio. The Trump tentacles go far and wide in Republican circles, Dan Moldea.
I really think that anything connected to Trump sooner or later is going to be greatly diminished. I think the Capitol insurrection, his behavior since the election overall, I think is going to destroy his legacy. And I think that's once the people start to become deprogrammed and his supporters become deprogrammed and start to get back in touch with reality, I think they'll see what fools they made of themselves by supporting this guy for as long as they did. And, I mean, my friends here in Washington who, inside the Beltway here, I mean, you know, I've had friends who supported Trump. I get their politics. I understand. But after all of this, especially since the election, I don't question their personal politics anymore. I question their basic sense of right and wrong if they continue to support this guy after all this.
877-217-5757. We will spend a few more minutes with Dan Moldea, and then we're slated to hear from Jay Grimes, chief meteorologist from WAFP Channel 9. And the former state climatologist on what is a brutally cold and icy day in Baton Rouge, of all places, and across Louisiana. We'll talk more. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. A bit more time, a few more minutes with Dan Moldea. You can get in under the wire with this fine gentleman and stellar journalist, 877-217-5757. Let's go to Leonard on Airline. Leonard, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, Leonard.
Good morning, Jim. I'm glad you're all right, Jim.
Thank you, sir.
I don't know if you remember, you was with another radio station there, but I predicted that Trump was going to win. I predicted he was going to be a one-termer. And I also predicted that he was going to try a coup. The reason I knew he was going to try a coup, because back in 2012, when Romney lost to Obama, he tweeted out, "We should have stormed the Capitol." Check it out. You can Google it.
All right. Well, did this really come as a surprise, what happened on the 6th, Dan?
Oh, totally. Oh, I was stunned. I was blogging at the time. I was blogging live and while it was going on. I was absolutely shocked by what I was hearing and seeing. When I turned on the TV in the midst of all of this, I heard the speech, and I thought it was nuts. And I was saying the previous day whether, gee, is he going to go for violence or is he going to go for peace? But something like this to go, I mean, I thought people would get beaten up in the streets or something to try to take over the Capitol. Not in my wildest imagination could I imagine something like this happening. If you turned in a script for this, a manuscript to this in New York for a publishing deal, they would say, you know, crazy. Like something like this just couldn't happen.
Yeah. A listener notes that this must be 5 years ago. Maybe six. You were on this show with yours truly, and Your opponent was Ali Akbar. And, Dan, you may not remember this, but Ali Akbar became Ali Alexander. And he is the guy who started this rally. He's the guy. He looks like Sammy Davis Jr. He is an African American Republican from Louisiana has made big news, and now I think he is talking with authorities and hopes that he will not be indicted. What about the criminal possibilities for Donald Trump? Mitch McConnell alluded to those.
I was going to say Mitch McConnell really paid particularly emphasis on the possibility of a criminal indictment. I saw a story, I think, in the Washington Post today or last night about the U.S. Attorney's Office having some interest in doing this. I think it's very, very possible. As you know, I'm looking for Jimmy Hoffa's remains right now, and I think I'm just very, very, very close to scoring on this. And it's under a bridge in New Jersey. The FBI guys who have been working generally on this case have been deflected away from it because they're all investigating domestic terrorism right now, which, as they should, because this is something that needs to be investigated. So it's going to be interesting to see where these investigations go and who winds up getting indicted, where they get some of the small fry, like the crazy guy with the horns and the fur around his neck, you know, the guys, the ex-military guys with the helmets on, the people with the plastic handcuffs, restraints that were running around. I mean, any number of these people, or whether they're going to have to go after the people who were very much part of the insurrection from behind the scenes, whether they were congressmen, senators, or the president of the United States.
Well, Dan, always good to catch up with you. And
I'm so glad you're well, Jim. That just shocks me that you got held up.
Yeah, and you know, when it involves a gun, that's serious business. But
that's serious business.
But thank goodness.
Jimmy Hoffa said, charge a gun, run from a knife. Do you believe that? That's what he said in the Irish run. Do you believe that?
I think it's a low percentage move.
I think stand where you are. I think when somebody points a gun at you, you stand where you are.
Well, yeah, and this guy had it about 6 inches away from me, and so if I'd made any move that was considered a threat to him, he probably would have used it. He even went into a shooter stance at one point.
Oh, my God.
But it lasted about a minute, and it was over. He got my wallet and my phone, but I'm still alive and talking on the air, and I'm...
And all of us are the beneficiaries of that, Jim. Well done.
No wonder you're one of my favorite guests. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, Jim.
Be safe.
Bye-bye.
In Washington, D.C.